This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Kathy Barnett Show. I am your host, Kathy Barnett, and I'm going to bring my guest right on in because I want to use every moment of my time with him wisely. I want to be a wise steward of how we kind of walk through the conversation today, because today, people, it's all about AI. And so I want to bring in my guest, Malin Kopenkar. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, that's right.
Good. I know. I struggle with names. It's so crazy. I don't even understand why. But Malin Kopenkar, let me tell you guys, his background is extensive. I'm going to just share pieces of your background as we move throughout this hour together, Malin. But Malin is the president of Great Learning. He built the first AI-based market research tool at Qualtrics and led a $20 billion IPO. He teaches at IIT Bombay and University of Utah, MBA from Kellogg, MS from Stanford, gold medalist from IIT Bombay, half Ironman triathlete and represented India at World Swimming Championships, and holds 31 U.S. patents, technology entrepreneur, and former Google and McKinsey executive. I'm going to share more and more of your background as we move through this, because I think it's important. You have a lot of people out there on the World Wide Web sounding or presenting themselves as experts. You are actually an expert. And so I want to give you credit for that. So, Malin, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Kathy.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just jump into the deep end. Last week, right before NVIDIA had their earnings call, the question on everyone's lip was, is AI a bust or boom? Is it going to go the way of bell-bottom jeans and afros? Or is it something revolutionary like the Ford assembly line or electricity? No one is using kerosene lamps when J.P. Morgan and Edison brought forth electricity. So which one is it, a boom or a bust? I think we got our answer last week. I want to hear your thoughts.
No, thanks for asking that, Kathy. And you're right. I think everybody is trying to get to that one question. Definitely Wall Street is AI a bubble? Is it a real boom, or is it just going to, bust? I would caveat that I'm sure everyone has an opinion, and I definitely don't have a crystal ball. However, what I would like to tell the audience is, instead of trying to predict that future, let's take a look at our past, right? And let's try to learn from what we have seen to work or not. You mentioned about J.P. Morgan, in fact, so let's start with that. Back in the 1880s to 1920s, J.P. Morgan, he and a few others got together and created this larger company called U.S. Steel. And that was the time when steel was, you couldn't have enough of producing steel. It was used to produce all kinds of skyscrapers. All the skyscrapers you see in New York, in Philly, it was that boom that, fueled all that. They would just make steel after steel and large skyscrapers after skyscrapers, bridges. The entire infrastructure for the industrial age started in that phase. And sure enough, after that, by the way, since you talked about bust, we did have the Great Depression. But it was in the mid-1950s, the mid of the 20th century, that you saw all these companies start sprouting up, your Sears, your Walmart. And guess where they, these large banks, J.P. Morgan Chase and so on. These businesses were built on the backs of that infrastructure that was built thanks to U.S. Steel and all that investment that went into that. Let's go forward to, the 1996 to 2002. Not sure how many of you in the audience remember that time, or maybe were even born during that time. But that was the time when the internet boom had happened. And I think close to more than $100 billion of investment was being made in setting up these switches and routers and fiber optic cables to power the internet, right? Companies like Cisco were the darling of, were the Nvidia of back then. It was worth some $500 billion and everybody wanted to buy Cisco stock. And of course, after that, there was that bit of an internet bust that you might want to call it. But that internet did not disappear. What happened was today we have the likes of Netflix, of Google, of Amazon, of Microsoft, of Apple. These companies are built on the backs of that infrastructure that was built back in the 1996-2002 period, right? And I use these lessons from history. And by the way, these companies are worth much more than Cisco. Each one of them is at least $1 trillion of market cap. If not, I think Google just crossed $3 trillion. Nvidia, of course, is the most valuable company. But, you know, I use these examples from history to fast forward to today. Today, Nvidia is the darling of everyone who wants to buy stocks, right? It's the most valuable company. I think it's has surpassed $4 trillion, probably more than $4 trillion now. And that's because it is the U.S. Steel. It is the Cisco of back then. It is the one that is responsible today for building out that infrastructure, that AI infrastructure that the world is looking forward to, right? But that's also the good news. Maybe the, like every, again, going back in history, you will have a little bit of bust. You know, that's inevitable, right? Everything, the stock market is never smooth. There are ups and downs. But what is there to stay is that the infrastructure is being built for AI so that if you were to ask me 10 years from now, in fact, I expect even, you know, companies that will be even more valuable than Nvidia. Just like how 10 years, 20 years from when Cisco built its the infrastructure, there are companies which are much more valuable today than Cisco. Similarly, you will see companies which will build on the backs of what Nvidia is doing. So in short, I feel we are just at the beginning. We are at the infrastructure building phase of AI, and the best is only to come in front of us. I don't know if that answers your question on whether it's a boom or a bust.
It absolutely did. And I love the way in which you did it, because I am a student of history. I love history. And I read the book, The Men Who Built America. And it talks about the Vanderbilt and the Rockefeller and the Carnegie and the Swifts and the J.P. Morgan. And each of them created an industry almost out of thin air. And the world has never been the same. And you're right. The companies that have built off the backs of that initial infrastructure is more valuable than the beginning. And so I agree with you. I do not believe AI is a bust. I believe it is revolutionary. I believe it is here to stay. And that is the reason why we must understand it. You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I'll be right back on the other side.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Hello, everyone. You are back. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show, and I have my guest, Malin Kopitkar. Again, Malin is a senior executive and product leader who specializes in scaling high growth businesses through data driven strategy and applied AI. He's the president of Great Learning. He built the North American operations from the ground up to $100 million a year in 5 years, forging partnerships with top institutions like MIT, Harvard, and Microsoft. Malin, thank you so much for being here with us.
Of course. Thank you, Kathy. Happy to be here.
So when we came out of that first segment, I want all of you to just wrap your mind around AI is here to stay. I do not believe it's going anywhere. It has actually improved my life in many regards. I only see people adopting it more and more and more. But as we move forward in this, I think this is a particular tool, unlike oil, unlike energy, unlike the car and the assembly line, unlike steel. This is the first time that I'm aware of humans have built a tool that can literally take humanity out of the loop, right? Like with electricity, we always needed someone to flip the switch. With AI, it doesn't really need you. It doesn't really need me. AI has gotten so smart that it can actually recreate itself. It can duplicate itself in many regards. And it is smarter than most of humanity. And if it's not today, it certainly will be in the next 2 years, I would suspect. So with that, seeing that we have actually created something that is smarter than us, that does not really need us and kind of takes us out of the loop completely in many regards, what could possibly go wrong, Melind?
Great point, Kathy. And look, I will not shy away from admitting that AI has indeed, you know, it's come to a point, and it's only getting better, where it is able to do many, many tasks that humans would do, right? Just to give you a perspective, there's this Challenger report. In fact, the one that just came out identified that there were 31,000 job cuts in just 1 month, and they attributed that to specifically to AI. For the year till date, you know, since January of this year, 2025, it seems there have been 140,000 layoffs where the cause they attribute to is AI. So yes, you know, you, on one side, you look at all that and you would say, well, you know, so is AI really taking away our jobs, right? The way I like to look at it is that AI is very, very good at doing tasks. So yes, if what you do is a set of repetitive tasks day in and day out, then my answer to you would be, unless you change the way you work or the job that you're doing, AI could be, you know, potentially take away that job. However, I like to differentiate between tasks and jobs, right? So AI is very good at doing tasks. It's not very good at doing a job. And what's the difference between the two? The way I would like to explain it is that, let's say, you know, you've been asked to build a certain software to solve a certain problem, right? If you are a typical somebody who's good at that job, will first try to ask the right question. So what are we trying to do here? What's the problem that needs to be solved? You know, is there a better way to do it? Once I know what's the problem to be solved, how do I break it down into smaller problems that can be done one by one? How do I know that it's working? What can I measure after I have, you know, built a solution for that? And only after I map all that out, I get started on actually writing the code for it, right? Another good example would be, you know, let's say building a house. You can either be the person who will just blindly come with a hammer and nails and say, tell me where I need to just start punching the nails or, you know, painting the walls, right? Or you could be that contractor who says, well, let me take a step back. Let's try to understand, what does my client want? They want to build a house, but let's be more precise. What kind of house are they looking for? What kind of design? You know, how big? You know, where should the rooms be, right? Trying to define the problem. And even after the house is built, how do I know it's built to a certain standard? Well, I'm going to come in and I know what to check for, right? I know whether the painter has done a good job, whether the plumber has done a good job. I know how to check all that. And that requires a human to be able to, figure that out. So in both these examples, AI is the one who's doing those tasks. So if painting is all that you do day in and day out, just painting a wall, very likely AI and, you know, robots, which are now being, AI-powered robots, you may have seen the ones being announced by Tesla, the Optimus robots, very likely AI will be able to do that. In fact, will be able to do that far better than a human would. However, if your job is about trying to first problem solve what tasks need to be done in the first place, being able to manage those tasks by giving different people different orders on, all right, you do the painting, you do the hammering of the nails, you do this. And if your job requires that you also be able to have that ability to check whether that those tasks were done up to a certain standard, then that's the kind of job that will not go away, right? So
right.
The way I like to look at, to answer that question about is AI taking away my jobs, is AI is taking away your tasks. But AI is not going to, but if you're going to be somebody whose job requires managing a set of tasks, then I think you are not, AI is not replacing you. If anything, AI is going to empower you. That same manager now, who could manage, say, 10 tasks will now be able to manage 100 tasks in the same time. Right.
Right. And that is the promise that we're told awaits all of us. And yet what you've described would be something that most of us are familiar with when it comes to ChatGPT, where ChatGPT just provides answers to a set of prompts, right? So I, as the human, have to know how to ask the right questions. And so I'm still needed in that scenario. But here's another term that is becoming, that I don't think most people are aware of, but I believe it is elevating itself, and that is agentic, where it's not, where AI is no longer just waiting for me to ask the question or to provide a prompt, but that AI is itself acting. And it appears to have some sense, a spark of life almost to the untrained eye. And I would be a layperson in this. And it almost looks like a spark of life. It is not waiting on a prompt. It is actually acting almost on its own, although we're told it's not. But AI is evolving so rapidly that even those jobs that would require a manager to think may be, the manager may now be. So not only is the person with the brush and painting who just comes into the workforce with a hammer and want to hit a nail will be replaced, but now the manager who is overseeing it could be replaced. Talk to us about the difference between agentic versus what most of us are aware of, ChatGPT.
Yep. No, great question. And the way I like to explain the difference between ChatGPT and agentic is, using a human analogy, it's somebody who has a brain, which is awesome, right? The brain can, you know, tell you, can think through and come back with an answer. But somebody who has a brain and now arms and legs, right? So arms and legs are the that person is the doer. So that person doesn't just think, but also says, all right, so what next? And actually does that stuff. And that's what the difference between ChatGPT and agentic AI. Agentic AI, ChatGPT has a brain, so you can ask it to write a poem about your work. Agentic AI will actually do the work for you, right? So that's how I would look at the difference. And to give a more concrete example, if you are using ChatGPT, for example, for hey ChatGPT, help me with my email, help me phrase it better. ChatGPT, you give it your email, it will tell you here's all the grammatical mistakes and here's how to fix it, right?
Right.
Agentic AI will say, well, don't even worry about all that. Every morning, just give me the command. Every morning, I will open up your email. I will search through your inbox. I'll look at which are the most important emails that need to be replied by today. I will look at the past email to see what's an appropriate response. I will craft that response. And by the way, I'll also go ahead and send it. Of course, if you allow me to. If you want, I can also ask for your approval before I do send it, right? So that's agentic. It's doing the work, not just thinking about the work.
Yeah. Again, I asked now what I asked at the beginning of this second segment. What could go wrong with this when you take humans out of the equation? Okay. And I know, you know, when you listen to Sam Altman or Elon Musk or even Jensen at NVIDIA, everyone's just so excited and the future is bright. I'm going to play a video later on, you know, with Elon Musk and Jensen giggling over the prospect of money not mattering any longer and everyone just happy. And yet, as a human, just a regular old human, I'm thinking to myself, this is very fascinating, this tool, but there are some pitfalls here. We have like 30 seconds. What do you want to say?
You're right. You know, everything has its pitfalls. Things that can go right can also go wrong. In fact, I would use the term the sleeping driver syndrome, you know, where cars we're already seeing that cars are getting so intelligent, they can self-drive you everywhere. But that doesn't mean you should fall asleep on the wheel, because we know that, you know, God forbid certain situations arise where the AI may fail. At that point, you need to take over, right? So I look at us humans in a similar vein, that yes, there will be pitfalls. There are bound to be.
Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought right there. You're listening to the Kathy Barnett Show. I'll be right back on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Everyone, welcome back to the Kathy Barnett Show. You are listening, and I am listening and learning from my guest, Malin Kopitkar. His career is defined by pioneering first. He built the world's first AI-based market research tool at Qualtrics, scaling the division to over $300 million a year and a successful IPO, designed the wireless chip for the first Apple iPhone, at Marvel Semiconductors, and holds 31 U.S. patents. You're clearly a subject matter expert in this, and that's why I'm so very grateful, Malin, that you would take some time out to talk to us. And I hope this is the first of many conversations about AI.
Yep, absolutely.
So on the... Right before we went to break, we were talking about the fact that AI kind of takes humanity out of the loop. It's going to be, I think we're going to have much smarter people than what we've experienced over the past couple of years, who are aware of the dangers, the great things to come, the obvious blind spots that we have with this, and work very hard to keep humanity and all of it. But let me pivot and say, for the first time a couple of weeks ago, because I'm all in on AI. I think it is fascinating, revolutionary. But for the first time, I don't know, a thought just popped in my mind that this could be God to some people. I mean, I am a Christian, a devout Christian, and I think, what do I get from God, right? I come to God for wisdom, for not just knowledge, but discernment, for judgment, for, kind of guidance, what is right, what is wrong, making things happen for me, opening up doors of opportunities for me. And then I look at agentic, for example, AI, and I could see where people will look at this entity as God. It certainly presents like a friend. We've heard many reports of people actually looking at it, talking to it about its about their mental health. It has evolved. It's not just, you know, a light switch and flipping on a light switch or turning on your car. It has evolved into something that's very personable. And I could see that, that people could look at it as a religion, a source of morality, what is good, what is bad. What are your thoughts?
No, a great point, Kathy. You know, I definitely don't think, in fact, I think that's a danger that we all run into when we start thinking of AI as a God, you know, because AI
is... But it is kind of all-knowing, right?
And, you know, without getting into the details of how it works, AI is all-knowing based on our own knowledge. You know, what we've done is we've fed all our collective knowledge, which, you know, the trillions and trillions of words and data and documents that are on the internet, we fed this to the AI. And all it's doing is trying to make sense of some patterns, you know. A good example I often use, if I were to teach it, getting a little bit more technical, I'd say, you know, when I type the capital of France is, and AI completes it and says the word Paris. And we think, wow, AI is super smart. It figured it out. It did not figure it out. What it did was it went through trillions of data, although it did it really, really fast. And it said, well, the capital of France is, and you know, in that split fraction of a second, it tried all combinations, said, can the capital of France be Philly? Well, the probability of that is very low. I don't see Philly being a very highly probable word. Can it be DC? Not quite. Can it be London? Can it be, you know, it goes through maybe 100 such cities, and then it comes across this word called Paris. And it says capital of France is Paris. Oh, wait a minute. There's a lot of probability that Paris comes very close, somehow seems to be very strongly associated with France. And so it immediately blurts out the word Paris. And we think, that's so amazing, right? AI was smart. It figured it out. It didn't figure it out. All it did was just looked at, in that one split second, millions of possible data, looked at the probability of what's the best word to put in there, and just took a chance and said it's going to be Paris, right? It was a good chance because the probability was very high. So that's, you know, without getting too technical, that's how AI works, right? It's just a big probabilistic machine. Go ahead.
But let me add to that. I mean, you clearly understand the large language models. You understand the weights that are placed on different probabilities. But that's requiring a lot for the typical person. I mean, we have people who believe a man could be a woman. We have people who believe that opening up your border to 20 million illegals just walking in, like there's no problems there. So it's relying on humans, the vast majority of us, to actually pause and think longer than what we're being told. And I was mentioning to you before we started, I saw this interview between Sam Altman and Tucker Carlson, and it did not give me the warm and fuzzies, because here you have a model, large language model, and it's getting a sense of right and wrong from somewhere. And Sam Altman said, I guess the buck stops with me. And then when asked, okay, Sam, then what's your moral? I mean, how do you get your sense of right and wrong? And he's like, oh, I don't know, you know, I guess from a little bit of here, a little bit of there, which would be okay if the entire world wasn't clicking on ChatGPT and getting a sense of right and wrong from that one individual. And it just, and again, it dawns on me that people could look at this thing as God. It does present as all-knowing. You understand large language models and the weights, but most people aren't, I mean, you know, like they don't even know what an LLM is. And so I think it's requiring a lot. Like, what should the government be involved in anything? I mean, how do we protect ourselves? Do the government has a role, has an incentive to protect itself and its people and its culture and its values from manipulation? Or should we just trust, wish upon a star, cross our fingers and wish upon a star that Sam Altman morality is good enough for us to base all of humanity on?
No, great. very deep, but extremely, you know, relevant questions, right? I think you bring up a very good point that you used, you know, Sam Altman as an example, which is OpenAI. But the point you're making is, you know, the creators of that AI, you know, Sam Altman and his team have trained their AI, OpenAI, on certain data, right? Which they decided for whatever reason was the right data to train it on. And Google will train on some other data, you know, XAI on some other. The point is the AI is just as good as the data it's trained on. So to your point around questions around morality, AI will give you an answer, by the way, to all these questions you brought up, these moral questions. It will always give you an answer. That's the thing about AI. It always has an answer. Whether it is the right answer, the wrong answer, well, that depends on the data we humans have fed it, right? Whatever data Sam Altman decides to feed that AI, that's what it will blurt out. So therefore, to answer your question, should then we somehow regulate it? You know, should the government get involved? Well, clearly, if people are using it, we don't want people to be misled, right? And in that sense, we should absolutely have some oversight on it, right? I'll give you, by the way, this is a real problem, and it's going to get even more real. You will start seeing, or you'll start hearing calls which sound like your kid. You know, and with no pun intended, I kid you not, you will start hearing, get a phone call which will sound like your kid and will say, you know, dad or mom, I'm in distress. I'm stuck here. You know, I was driving the car. Could you help me with some money, right? And it'll sound like your kid. It'll answer back to you on your questions like your kid. And what do you do at that point? This is, by the way, I'm not even talking about science fiction. This is coming. It's already there. You know, a good stat I'd like to quote is more than 80% of those phishing emails that you get, you know, that please click here and you want a raffle and so on, they are being generated by AI. Mm-hmm. And we thought we had a good handle on saying, you know, this is a scam email. I'm not going to click on it. Well, it turns out the AI-generated emails have a 4x higher likelihood of people clicking on it because AI has just learned how to manipulate people, right? It's just learning based on all the data on which kind of emails do people click on, which they don't. And that AI is awake 24/7, right? So to answer your question, should therefore we regulate it? Absolutely, we should. The devil, though, is in the details on how you go about it, right? It probably makes for a longer discussion on how to regulate, to what level the government should be involved, to what level should companies take responsibility here. But absolutely, AI, we are at that stage where AI can manipulate humans. It can take advantage of them. It can be heavily misused if you're not careful.
You know, and I just heard about that. And I think it was Sam Altman who was saying families as well as the president of the United States may have to have a particular code word so that we can not be scammed by AI, i.e. for some people, God. Think about that. If AI is all-knowing, is he God? And if he is your God, will he lie to you? You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. We're going to come right back with my guest, Milan Kopacar. We're talking about all things AI. See you on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Assuming there's a continued improvement in AI and robotics, which this seems likely, the money will stop being relevant at some point in the future. There will still be constraints on power, like in it, like electricity and mass. But I think at some point, currency becomes irrelevant.
Vincent, any thoughts?
By the way, the NVIDIA earnings call is later today.
Elon just wants to share with you some breaking news.
Yeah, billionaires giggling is how I labeled this. They're giggling, and what you didn't hear, so Elon Musk and Jensen from NVIDIA, the CEO of NVIDIA, they met last week right before NVIDIA's earnings call. It appears. And they were just kind of talking on stage, shooting the breeze. And right before the billionaire started giggling, Elon has just said that work will become optional. There's a future where work is optional. And of course, we know, because I talk about it all the time, work gives dignity, work gives purpose and life. But Elon is now saying, well, hey, work is going to become optional. You don't even need to work. But then he ends with saying there's a future where money is irrelevant. And then the billionaires start giggling, right? Because they're like, they're so excited. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. Again, work gives dignity. Work gives purpose. It gives me a reason for living. It gives me hope, which is necessary so that I'm not depressed and want to commit suicide. And so now they envision a world where work is, you know, optional. They won't really need you. Right. You're not necessary any longer. You can come in to work or not. Nobody really cares. And I don't know if that's the kind of world most of us are envisioning for our little boys and girls. But I just wanted to get your thought on that, Malin. I mean, am I far off or am I tapping on something?
You know what? I would like to interpret what, or at least I see AI. And interpret what Elon just said in a more optimistic way. And that is that, you know, you mentioned about work gives us a purpose, you know, and dignity. And I absolutely believe it. But I also believe something more. You know, I believe that work towards, you know, serving others, right, helping make people's lives easier, that's what gives us purpose, right? The work that we do is a means to that end, to, you know, help make the world a better place. an example of what I mean here is, you know, let's say a radiologist. Radiologist's job work is not to go through, you know, images and radiology scans and so on day in and day out. His job, if he could, is to cure people, to diagnose a potential cancer and let and help that patient, you know, hopefully cure them, save lives, right? That's what gives him purpose. That's what gives him dignity in his work. What AI could do for the radiologist is go through all that manual, you know, going through troves and troves of radiology scans. That can be offloaded to AI so that the doctor could focus on what really gives his work purpose, which is to help cure people, to help save lives. And that's how I see the future evolve. I see people doing the work, focusing more on the part of that work that truly gives them purpose, truly helps them make the world a better place, and instead asking AI to do all the task-based stuff, which is more manual in nature. Anyway, that's my interpretation of how I would see the future.
Now, I do believe there are some people who just need to be freed from the mundane task of life in order for them to have their full self-realization, and they will capitalize on AI and do very well. But I also believe that there's probably a larger segment of the population who just want to wake up, punch the clock. You know, they don't have the capacity to, you know, to really capitalize on all that AI is going to bring. Have you seen any studies, behind the scenes studies that they're not willing to release on how many people are going to actually be left behind?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are not just seen, but it is happening. A lot of people are being laid off. And there, Kathy, my response there would be, look, if you are going to be that person who wants to clock in every day at a certain time, do certain tasks exactly as you've been told, and just clock out and go back, if that's the life you want, then I absolutely agree that those jobs, that kind of work is definitely under threat. It is not just under threat, it is already going to be taken over by AI if it hasn't been already, right? A good example.
And now let me ask you this. Because I grew up in dire poverty. I grew up, I say, below the bottom rung of the economic ladder. I grew up in a home with no insulation, no running water, outhouse in the back, well on the side. We were just poor. We had to grow our own food. If I wanted beans or peas or potatoes, we had to grow it. And I remember getting my first job, and it was a manual job. I mean, I didn't have a lot of skill sets. I would go on later to get multiple degrees and work in some interesting fields. But initially, on my way out of dire poverty, I got some really mundane jobs, but those were the building blocks that allowed me to be able to claw my way out of dire poverty. Are we removing the ladder now for people who want to be able to start off with those small building blocks? Are we relegating a whole segment of our population to poverty forever?
You know, you bring up a very important point, and the answer to that is not easy. You know, I agree that to help alleviate poverty, we need to make sure that people get a start in their lives. They get to start with a job, right? My hope is, Kathy, that what also goes hand in hand with a job is the skills to do those jobs. You know, which, in other words, the education to do those jobs. I too come from, you know, I actually come back from back in India. From a very humble background, right? And what I've seen is what changed for me, the biggest thing that changed for me was I managed to, in India, there's this competitive exam that everyone takes. You know, you fight hard for it, and eventually, you know, some of us manage to get a certain rank, which allows us to go to a good university. And looking back at my own career, I got into that university, IIT Bombay, which is one of the top universities there. From there, I got into Stanford. From Stanford, you know, I got into Google. From Google, you know, I also went to do my MBA at Kellogg. So looking back, it was a great education that made all the difference in my career. And I am convinced that if you want to alleviate poverty, the right path to it is you know, try to get democratize education. And I think you can do that today with, you know, high quality education, education that can prepare people for the jobs of the future. And I feel that thanks to that very AI that is taking away the current jobs, that same AI could train people, including those who are below a certain poverty line, for these new jobs of the future, right? So to answer your question, how can we alleviate poverty? My answer would be we should try to use education and AI and education to do
I absolutely agree with you on that. However, I do believe that there are some soft skills as well. You know, like my first job taught me how to wake up on time, get to work on time, and how to address people and talk to people and things like that. You know, those skills that sometimes, you know, aren't necessarily taught in a classroom setting or over a computer, but just interacting with people at that level. But this also kind of, you know, a great segue of what kinds of jobs now, you know, I have a son in college, another daughter getting ready to go to college. What careers, what studies should we absolutely avoid? Let's start there.
You know, Kathy, my answer to that, because I too have two boys. One is in 11th grade now, the other one in 9th. So high school, getting ready to go to college. And they have the same question as your kids and kids everywhere have, right? That what are those jobs? So therefore, what should I go and study in college? You know, should I even do college at all? And, you know, my answer there is that, look, the jobs are changing so fast that no matter which job you are thinking about, no matter which area you feel you like to do, trust me, AI is going to have its impact. It'll be very different than the kind of jobs, you know, people do.
But as of right now, 2025, what should they not?
What do they not do?
What should they probably avoid?
So here, you brought up one interesting point, which would be the answer to that, which is that, you know, one of the skills you learned when you did those jobs, you know, as you were starting in your career, was interpersonal skills, you know, soft skills, how to interact with fellow, not AI, not machines, but interact with fellow human beings, right? And that skill will never go away. Humans, so long as humans are there on this planet, hopefully they will be, right? We will need to learn that art of dealing with other humans, and no AI can replace that, you know?
So like nursing is probably a skill. Having good bedside manners is probably a career field you want to go into as of today, right? Nursing.
Correct. Nursing would be one, but, you know, I think the jobs of the future will be where in some shape or form you are interacting with, even if you're building some, even if you're a software engineer, you will no more be required, you can't know any longer say, oh, I'm going to be a software engineer who's just going to sit inside my room and just code all day. Because if that's all you want to do, AI will take over your job. But if you're saying, no, I'm going to...
But now what about a call center? Like that's interpersonal skills, but AI is taking over call center.
You bring up a good point, Kathy, because a good example is there's this company called Klarna. It's a famous use case, in fact, that I teach in my business school. They laid off a lot of their call center workers, but they said, you know, AI will do all that. Only to find that they had to go back and rehire a lot of them because... The customers which were interacting with that company, it was a financial company for their customer support, started leaving them saying, you know, we don't like your systems are just too difficult to get any answers to. So while AI was doing a fantastic job of customer support by triaging the tickets and filing a ticket and whatnot, the people who were calling into that company still wanted that human connection, wanted to talk to someone who would truly understand them, right? So to answer your question, where I think the jobs of the future will go is all the jobs we have today, especially the ones that interact with people, will be there. But it will be a combination of a human who has an AI to assist that person to do that job better.
Okay. Well, okay, guys, there you have it. You've been listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. This is my guest, Malin Kopitkar. Thank you so much, sir, for being on with me. If you are listening to me on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, leave a comment. But you can listen to me a little bit of everywhere. I'm on my flagship station, WPHT 1210. Thank you, guys. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.